The following is a special presentation of Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
In some of my songs, I have casually mentioned the fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more.
What, you may ask yourself, does LCMS President Matt Harrison playing A Mighty Fortress on banjo and Tom T. Hall singing I Like Beer have in common? Well, quite a bit, as it turns out. You see, beer played an important role in the Protestant Reformation, which we're celebrating this week. Martin Luther loved the beverage. Katharina von Bora, his wife, was a trained brewster. Luther's love of beer was so well known in his lifetime that Duke Eric I of Braunschweig gave him a pot of beer to sustain him during his ordeal at the Diet of Worms. Later, Luther received another cask of beer as a wedding present. So, you see, beer and Lutheranism have a close, intimate history. I'm Kip Allen, host of World Lutheran News Digest and Free to Be Faithful moderator. I'm also a home brewer and beer aficionado. Joining me is fellow brewer Christian Bolke of the Office of International Mission, and we'll explain more about the beer Luther heritage. Believe it or not, beer and the Reformation have an awful lot to do with each other. Now, it just so happens that I, your humble host from World Lutheran News Digest and moderator Free to Be Faithful, am also a home brewer. I've been a home brewer since the 1980s. I'm also a certified judge of things beer, and of course, I enjoy beer history. Now, I have a guest with me today who not only works with the Missouri Synod's Office of International Mission, he's also a beer buff, I should say, a beer expert. Christian, tell me about yourself.
Well, my name is Christian Bolke, and yes, I do work with the Office of International Mission, and when I am not working with our missionaries, I do enjoy homebrewing, certainly enjoy finding new craft beers out there and giving them a test, and studying up on beer history, beer knowledge, learning anything and everything that I can about beer.
And what does this have to do with Martin Luther? Well, I'm glad you all asked this. It so happens that Martin Luther was a great lover of beer. In fact, he liked a particular type of style of beer that is known today as Bock. And his wife, Katharina, was also a skilled brewster. And she brewed. That's what we call women brewers or brewsters. Don't ask me what we call women who cure hams. Sorry about the little beer humor. But he was very, he was so involved in beer and so connected to beer that when he appeared before the Diet of Worms, where he was put on trial, well, the city of Anbeck actually gave him a barrel of beer for comfort. Actually, I think that was Eric I, excuse me, of Westphalia. And then when he was married, then the town gave him another barrel of Bock beer. Now, also it so happens, since you asked, that Bock beer and the various types of beers that sprung from it were very popular among Protestants, whereas the Catholic provinces during the Reformation favored another type of beer called Grut, or perhaps even wine. Christian, what do you know about this?
Well, there certainly were a fair number of wine-growing regions, and many of them were in the southern part of Europe. Most familiar to us would be France and Italy. But even in the southern and southwestern parts of Germany, there were a number of wine-growing regions. And and so you have wine as a drink of choice for many people, and one that was certainly enjoyed. And Luther even himself references wine. And the gruit you mentioned is something very interesting too. Prior to the entrance of hops into the brewing scene, the beer had to be bittered. If beer is not bittered, you have a very sweet alcohol that you consume, but it doesn't have a lot of balance. And not only the balance, but it doesn't have anything to preserve it.
That's right.
And so one of the ways in which both the balance and preservation took place was by the use of various herbs to do that bittering, and thus termed gruet. And there's a lot of history, as I understand, with regard to taxing and the way in which gruet may have fallen out of practice and hops may have taken over the scene and given us what we have today. What can you tell me about that tax situation?
Well, since you asked, what had happened was that the beer trade was generally run through monasteries. Wherever the Catholic Church had established a monastery, they also always established a brewery. And this is something that they would give to the public, and of course they drink to themselves. However, because it was church property, it couldn't be taxed. And this really irritated a lot of the secular rulers of that area. Now, you mentioned about hops. Hops, unlike vineyards, hops need a cold, dry, or a cold, wet climate, relatively high altitude, and it was particularly well grown in the province of Bohemia, which, by sheer coincidence, also turned into a Protestant community during that era. And the hops were exported to the northern German areas, and they used hops instead of the gruet, instead of the herbs, and came up with what we now know as beer. Actually, it's beer is an interesting thing. It's 2 years before the Reformation, they were passed what was known as the Reinheitsgebot, which was the Bavarian purity law, which established that beer had to be made only with malt, hops, and water, and later on, of course, yeast, which...
But the yeast was somewhat of a mysterious ingredient at the time, which is why it wasn't included in the first... The Reinheitsgebot only included later, once the discovery of these microorganisms came to light, and of course that does mean that the the yeast was probably very wild, whatever was in the air at the time and fell in, certainly not providing the consistent fermentation results that that we're accustomed to today.
Absolutely. And this is one of the things that made the Bock beer so popular, was that in the province, in the town of Einbeck, where their beer was brewed, it was famous throughout the entire German region for being consistent. For some reason, their wild yeast or whatever it was relatively consistent in its flavor, and it was known to be a very popular beer. Now, how did it get to the name of Bock from Einbeck? Well, what had happened was that Germany, like the United States, has many regional accents. And the town of Einbeck. And if you go down to Bavaria, where they have a different accent, like our Southerners, they would go in and say, instead of ordering for an Einbeck beer, they'd say Ein Bock, which means one goat. And it became known as Bock beer. Throughout the area. And actually, to this day, oftentimes you'll find a symbol of a goat on the label of a Bock beer. There's one that even puts little tiny plastic goats on it. I forgot what brewery that is.
There's the Spetzel Brewery in Shiner, Texas, also is famous for using a goat on their Shiner Bock beer. Probably one of the most... identifiable Bock beers in the United States. Whether it's true to style in the purest sense is to be debated, but you will find the goat on the label.
Now, contemporary Bock beer is actually a lager. That is, it's made with a bottom fermenting yeast. It has very mild hopping, which means it tends to be a little bit on the sweet side. And on top of that, it's an interesting. It actually has a little higher alcohol level than most pilsners or typical beers. About 6.2565 by weight. Now, traditionally, what would happen is that the Bock beer was made toward the end of the harvest, and then was lagered or fermented and cooled over the winter areas, and then was released in the spring, in the Maibock. And it was considered kind of a celebration beer. Mm-hmm. And the very best of the Bocks were held over until the Christmas time the following year, and then were brought out as a celebration-type beer. And that tradition really is kept today. You can often find specialty Bocks from craft brewers that are released during these times. Now, again, why did Luther do this? Well, Luther had a number of views about beer. For example, I'm going to quote the founder here. Whoever drinks beer, he is quick to sleep. Whoever sleeps long does not sin. Whoever does not sin enters heaven. Thus, let us drink beer. Words of wisdom there.
Sounds like a good plan to me.
We old folks have to find our cushions and pillows in tankards. Strong beer is the milk of the old.
You know, it's said that Luther's tankard actually had the three chief parts of the Lord's Prayer, the Ten Commandments, and the Creed engraved into or somehow on the tankard, and that that he could drain the tankard in one drink. Whether this is true or not, I don't know. And that while he was draining the tankard, he would recite all three of those parts and use it as an exercise in piety. So sounds a little different than what we might expect today.
Well, we have to understand, we Lutherans sometimes have a reputation for being staid and dour. I don't understand that myself. They've obviously never gone to any kind of a Lutheran festival. But beer has really been an intricate part of the faith. I mean, whenever you get together for a Lutheran celebration at a church, for example, there's always going to be a keg there someplace. And this is one of God's gifts to us. And Luther made this very, very clear. He was not against drinking. He was against overindulgence, mm-hmm. whether it be food, whether it be beer, you name it. But you are to enjoy the gifts that God has given us.
Yeah. Yeah, repeatedly he would say that moderation was incredibly important, that that these gifts are not to be abused, that God has given them to us for our enjoyment. But he is quoted as saying something along the lines of, he who puts down the drink day and night and does not get out of bed is a problem. And of course, we know that. It requires confession and absolution, even for the sins of overindulgence and gluttony. But yeah, like you said, he was very much one who would say, enjoy the gifts that God has given to us through land and harvest.
Now, we talked earlier about the labeling of Bock beer using the goat. Now, another thing that was done was that Luther was so heavily identified with the style of beer that his image was often included on the labels of beer. And I'm bearing in mind back then, and even through the early part of the United States, is that many of the other people couldn't read. They were illiterate. But they would see that image of Luther, and they'd know it was a Bock. It was done all throughout northern Germany, through Scandinavia, and of course in the United States after the main German immigration in the 1840s and 50s, where again you'd find Luther's image. And you can still find it today on a number of Bock beers.
Having recently been in Wittenberg, I can attest to the fact that there in Wittenberg you can find Luther beer, and it has his face. So here we are, you know, 500 year celebration of the Reformation, and his face is still selling beer.
Saving the soul in so many different ways. Who would have thought that consuming that wonderful beverage beer is actually an act of worship? Well, you know, when you think about it, it is. This is one of the things, again, that Luther had stressed, was that there are so many pleasures and joys in life. And the thing to remember is that these are gifts of God, and we are enjoying them. He wants us to enjoy them, just not to abuse them. Now, I personally enjoy the process of making beer. I know you do as well, Christian.
I do.
And why don't you tell, you're a little bit more into it than me. You're a grain brewer. I'm more of an extract brewer at the moment. So tell me what you do.
Well, the process of brewing, so let's go back to the Reinheitsgebot and talk about the ingredients, because mm-hmm. that's really where we start. So your water and your grain, which is going to be primarily barley, although even at Luther's time, many of the references to the recipe include a fair amount of wheat.
Oh, yes.
Because that would have been the other grain that could be malted and basically converting the starches for sugars. So you start with your water and your grain, and you go through a process by which it's called mashing, but that process converts the remaining starches in the grain at a particular temperature. It converts them into sugars. And the need for the sugars is that yeast require sugar and oxygen to create alcohol through that process. So by creating this sugar water from the grain, you have what's called the liquor. Mm-hmm. And
wort,
thank you. Yeah, the hot water is the liquor.
That's right.
But you have this wort that can be fermented, but we want to make sure that we have the right flavor. So today, homebrewers have the joy of all kinds of ingredients. If we look back at the Reformation or even Middle Ages European brewing, it was very much reliant and dependent on the ingredients that were available locally, which is why each of the styles tended to be localized in their nature. Now we think of a Dortmunder or another particular German, but a Czech Pilsner. So those developed because of the ingredients and or process that was used locally. Today, homebrewers have access to hundreds of specialty grains from all around the world, hundreds, if not thousands, of hops and yeasts available. So there's a lot more control over the process. So we go back. We've got our grains, and we can make it dark or light. We can make it sweeter or drier. And then you have to boil this liquid. And boiling does a couple things. It sanitizes. Boiling always does that. So any bad that's in the water is cleared up. But we also want to bitter. And in order to extract bitterness, whether it be from spices or from hops, they have to be boiled. This is what extracts the bitterness into the liquid. So the boil takes about an hour. And at the end of the boil, you have to cool this wort down without introducing any wild yeast, as opposed to, the more traditional allowing the yeast in the air to fall in.
Yeah, you could get a real surprise sometimes.
You can. Once it's cooled down below 70 degrees, you can put the yeast in, and the yeast will begin to work.
Now, one of the things that I think was really important, putting it into perspective, we talked about the role of hops. Now, one of the things that hops does over and above the bittering is that it actually is a preservative. Because mm-hmm. beer without hops had a bad tendency to spoil rather early. And the thing to really remember about the Middle Ages or when Luther was there was the main killer was water. People did not know about germs. They didn't know why. You just drank water and you died. Well, the thing about beer making is that it's very processed through the boiling and through the adding of the hops makes it sterile. And when it's stored, because of the CO2 that rises from it, it creates a blanket that outside bacteria cannot enter. Mm-hmm. So it was a very healthy drink.
Yes, it was. And even if it was used or cut, a stronger version cut with the local water, the alcohol, again, has a tendency to sanitize. In many historical accounts, wine is used in the same way, almost with its antiseptic qualities.
Correct.
To sanitize the water so that the water was able to be drunk.
But one problem with wine is that the alcohol level is so high in it, it becomes a desiccant. It really drives water out of the body. That's not true with beer. The beer alcohol level is low enough so you can actually live on beer, drinking beer, without drying out. And that was another thing. Actually, it was vital when it came to exploration. Mm-hmm. The ships would go out exploring, and their water cask would go bad after 2 or 3 weeks, but the beer would still be there.
It would.
And if you read some of the early histories of the settlers, for example, the Mayflower, it was originally headed for Virginia. Why did they go to Massachusetts instead? Well, according to the log, they ran out of beer.
And necessity breeds a change in plans.
It did indeed. And so they landed at Plymouth Rock to restock and rebrew. And as long as they were there, they said, hey, what the heck, let's stay. But that always happened. Wherever the new explorers went, one of the first things they established were breweries.
That is fascinating.
So we're about running out of time here, but it is a fascinating topic on the impact that beer has had on history, on the United States, the temperance movement, for example. That with the WCTU was actually one of the very early examples of a lobbying organization, where they were not a political party, but they would contribute to people who supported their particular position. That was one of the very early ones. And the Puritans were one of my favorite people. Not really, but I mean, but the Puritans were not by any means people for abstention. They believed in temperance. By temperance, it means moderate behavior. Mm-hmm. And they actually prescribed in their early writings how much beer you may have for breakfast. During the American Revolution, very important here. We had, you've heard, of course, in 1773, there was the Boston Tea Party. Well, in 1770, there was darn near the Philadelphia Keg Party, where a bunch of American brewers, including such people as George Washington, proposed making some kind of an action. What had happened was is that the British beer that was imported was taxed, but beer that was brewed in the colonies at that time, although generally of inferior quality, was not taxed. And so when things were getting ready for the Revolution, the Loyalists tended to go to the taverns that served the British beer, and the Patriots tended to go to the taverns that served the American beer. And this is where a lot of the political arguments and some of the founding documents were written.
You know, it's fascinating because beer played another role in the Revolutionary War, in particular due to the rum that was coming from the South. And rum had the ability to disable anybody for a period of days on end. And what they were finding due to the harsh conditions, the challenges that were being faced, the discouragement, many of the soldiers would be intoxicated for days. And George Washington observed this and made a big push for beer, again, because it could be enjoyed, but the soldiers could wake up the next morning and be ready to go. And in fact, began to offer training for the militias that would include beer for all afterwards. And in some of my reading on beer in the Revolutionary War, George Washington is quoted as saying that some of the beers that were brewed with Indian corn were as good as the British beers he had had. So the quality of – not all of them were of poor quality. There were certainly some that met the expectation. Now, whether that means he was very thirsty and was willing to lower his standards a little bit, we'll never know. Certainly – lends itself well to conversation.
Well, so many of the founding fathers were brewers. Mm-hmm. Washington was a brewer. Jefferson was a brewer. Madison was a brewer. Of course, Sam Adams was a brewer. And Martin Luther.
Yep. So it's only fair that we continue the tradition, right? That we continue to brew at home. And I'd welcome you to stop on over and enjoy a fresh homebrew the next time you're in town.
And as Martin Luther might have said, Prost!
Prost.
The fact that I like to drink beer. This little song is more to the point. Roll out the barrel and lend me your ears. I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. I like beer. It helps me unwind and whiskey's too rough, champagne costs too much, vodka puts my mouth in gear. All this little refrain should help me explain, as a matter of fact, I love beer.
Yeah!